Welcome back to the Make or Break show, where each week we bring you stories of incredible makers and the make or break moments that have defined them along the way. I'm your host, Brandon Cullum, and this week we chat with Michael Maximo, a pro furniture designer, about the intersection of old school tools and new school technology. What is up, guys? Welcome back to the show. First off, right at the top, I want to apologize. I was on vacation last week. I said I would get a show out. I did not. I thought I'd be able to, but we had a cancellation that was a little bit late that was on me. And so sorry about that, but we've got a show coming out on normal schedule now. And so thank you so much for hanging in there and tuning in this week. You guys are going to enjoy hanging out with Michael. But before we get into that, as always, thank you so much to all the awesome supporters over on Patreon. It was kind of fun just to be out and just think about the last year, and honestly, this show has been one of my favorite parts of what I get to do, and so getting to talk to you guys each and every week, and that wouldn't be possible without those awesome supporters on Patreon. So if you guys are a supporter, thank you so much, and if you want to support the show, no pressure. Either way, you can head over to patreon.com/makeorbreakshow. All right, so jumping into this week's episode, we're hanging out with Michael. He runs his own professional furniture business down in Austin, Texas, and his stuff is insane. It is super cool. I was scrolling through Instagram, like I'm sure a lot of you guys do, and I follow tons of woodworkers, and all of a sudden, this insane table popped up that had speakers built in, but then it was all walnut. And then it had these waves, like sound waves in the doors that were 3D coming from the speakers. And there is a link in the show notes to this specifically, this build. And then I was diving into the maker, which was Michael, and his other past work. And his stuff is just beautiful. And what was really neat is I was also watching him do 3D mockups in Fusion 360. And then he was talking about how he has a shop bot and using a CNC, but then he's also using hand tools. And I thought this would be a really fun interview, breaking away a little bit from kind of the YouTube maker that we normally have on into just a just old school, just building furniture for a living. But he's using lots of really cool technology to do it. So I hope you guys enjoy this interview and let Michael know that you guys do be sure and follow him. He's Michael Maximo over on Instagram. So without further ado, let's jump into an interview with Michael. All right, guys, welcome back to the Make or Break show. We're hanging out with Michael Maximo Gutierrez. I'm hoping we get your name right. Thank you so much for jumping on. Incredible woodworker down in Austin, Texas. Thank you so much for joining us and chatting about your journey with making with wood.
Thank you, Brandon. Happy to be here.
Yeah, so I first saw, I think, your stuff pop up. It was the boombox desk. And I saw it, I guess I was just scrolling through Instagram, and I follow a lot of woodworkers, and so I usually see a lot of furniture popping up, but that one I definitely stopped because of, I mean, just the design of it was just insane. When, I guess we kind of start off with that, do you now work on like commission pieces? Like, do you do super custom pieces full time, or are you doing manufacturing of small goods as well?
The majority of what I do is all commission work. So every piece that I make is always something that I make for the first time. And with that piece in particular, I got pretty lucky because I had some really awesome clients.
Yeah.
And when I went up to, well, I had made them like a bedroom set kind of thing for their house. And I fixed a couple of things in their house. Like they bought this old mid-century home, and they had this bookcase in there that I went in and redid. And so I was kind of on their radar, and there's some really good photographers, and they had an idea for a piece for their studio. And so when I went up to meet with them, they had like a list of things that they wanted to incorporate into this piece. And one of them was like, they wanted to have some speakers in there. Really what that whole piece is like it's like a desk for two people. And so they wanted it to be a desk. They wanted it to have some speakers. They wanted it to have like a pullout tray that the customers could sit at and like enjoy a beverage while, you know, they were getting their whatever it was, you know, they were getting their photos taken of, and several other things. Plus the dimensions of this piece. I mean, it was 11 feet wide, and it was as tall as a desk. Yeah. And so it was a bunch of things to wrap my head around, and it took me a while to kind of design it. And it was the first piece that I got paid to design, which was really nice. And when I came up with something, they were really, I mean, they loved it, and they immediately just asked how much it would be to build, which I felt like was a turning point for me as like a designer, because yeah. it was something like really, really special in that way.
Yeah. When you, and we'll definitely get into design a little bit later, but when you are approaching, especially something like this, and I'll definitely include pictures in the show notes and everything. Are you thinking of like the overall form? Like, are you getting into like the function of it, or are you really looking at it from like the aesthetic side first and then kind of backing your way into it, figuring out how to actually like construct everything?
Yeah, I think of the overall look first, and I try to like give myself, well, one of the main things I do is try to avoid, doing things, or not necessarily avoid them, but I don't mind putting in the extra work to get something done. So, and I think a lot of times that allows for some really creative things to happen, because I'm not afraid to put in the work to make them happen. So, and it also just doesn't let you cut as many corners. So I like the overall concept of it first and what it's going to look like, and then working my way back through and making sure that it's all going to function correctly and that it's, you know, going to hold up well over time and things like that.
So are you, when you're just coming up with the overall form, like, are you sketching things out like quick on paper, like before you move to modeling? Like what's that kind of like initial idea phase for you?
Yeah. Anytime that there's something that involves like some organic shapes or curves or anything like that, I like to sketch it on paper first. And then once I get, you know, a general idea of what it is I'm looking for, then I'll transfer it over into like a CAD program and draw it on there. Right now I draw everything on Fusion 360.
Yeah.
And it's been such an amazing tool for me to have, because every little detail and every down to like the screw placement of everything, I can figure. So by the time that I finish drawing something up in Fusion, I feel like I've kind of built it already for the most part.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I've heard a lot of people talk about, especially with Fusion and 3D modeling, it's like you almost build the thing twice. And like sometimes it takes even longer to build it like in Fusion, because you're like trying to figure a bunch of stuff out than actually like the final piece. But
yeah, yeah. There's some people out there doing some really, really intricate stuff. I feel like drawing a table, it doesn't take too long, but right. Drawing something like that big, you know, speaker box console, that did take a while, and that was back when I was first learning how to use it, and it was taking me so long to draw that I decided to just start building it without having all the details worked out.
Yeah,
which ended up like really not being the best idea there towards the end. For me when I was making it, because after I made all those waves in the doors, there wasn't a hinge that I could find anywhere that would work for those doors. So I was in this weird spot, and like, you know, weeks, you know, started adding up, and I couldn't figure out how to get these doors to open. So luckily, at the time when I made it, I was working at the tech shop, or working out of the tech shop, which was this like maker community in Round Rock.
Oh, cool.
And, I was able to like design a hinge, which had a pivot point on the outside of the door. And there was like a machinist, that was also working on the tech shop. I passed this along to him, and he was able to fabricate these hinges for me, which was able to like save the whole design.
Yeah. That's crazy. Is it because of the waves coming in like at an angle, that, like, I guess a traditional hinge wouldn't work for that?
Yeah, the waves, well, you know, like a regular cabinet hinge, when you have to do the Forstner bit, you have to go in, I don't know, maybe like a half inch. Yeah. The way the waves were, it was actually kind of thin, you know, the wood was. So yeah. If I was to drill that hole in there, part of the hinge would come out. And then it's also like inset, the door is inset. So it's not sitting on top of the frame. Right. So yeah, so it has to, like, the pivot point has to be in a certain spot, and it only really worked if the pivot point was on the outside of the door.
That's cool. So where did the idea of waves, like, I'm guessing it's like sound waves is kind of the idea. Where did that come from?
Yeah, it was sound waves. I would say that it have to have been around that, and then kind of the ripple effect, kind of the way the water works.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just cutting out the two squares, with the waves on each side, it just felt like really balanced, and it brought something to the whole design. For me, that really balanced out this giant box. It kind of made it, I don't know, lighter or something.
Yeah.
And it tied, you know, the middle section has like a compartment for some storage. You can put like records in there or whatever you like. And those had some curves on it too. So it was a cool way to tie everything together.
Yeah. Yeah. When I first saw it, actually until you just said it, like, I was thinking it was like a coffee table size, just like a super long one. But man, as a table, yeah, that's so big. But yeah, it doesn't look, I guess, as big as it really is. Like, it makes it look, the organic shapes make it look real light. That's neat. So do you mostly work with walnut most of your projects?
Walnut is my favorite thing to work with, a favorite wood species. Most of my projects are walnut. Yeah, I don't do a whole lot of exotic woods, not because I don't want to. It's just I just feel like walnut ends up coming up quite a bit.
And this stuff looks so cool. So are you working on multiple big commission pieces at a time? Or when it's a project like that table, is it that pretty much the only thing you're working on until it's finished?
Yeah, usually I work on one thing at a time. Sometimes I feel like it's a little counterproductive for me to work on several different things. It depends on like how... you know, if I can keep them going in the same stages, I think it works really well. And if they're not too big, if it's like a big project, I like just, you know, going through it from start to finish, one piece at a time. When I first started woodworking, that's the way it was. I was just given a project to make, and I would show up to work, and that's what I did. And as soon as that was done, I would just move on to the next one. And it seemed to be like a pretty efficient and effective way to build stuff. So I kind of just kept that going.
So how did you get into just making things in general?
Well, it has a lot to do with like the way I was raised and where I grew up. I grew up on like a 4-acre plot, a couple miles outside of town. And it was like a small little town. And we had a bunch of animals, and my dad had his own business, and he moved houses. So there was always something to do, whether it be with the animals or with my dad's business. And we had a huge shop in the back, and we didn't have like all the best tools, and we didn't even have a whole lot of tools. So we always had to like, I don't know, be pretty creative with how we made things. And at the same time, like there wasn't a lot of tools that you can just go buy at the Home Depot or Lowe's to move houses. So we had to manufacture a lot of our own parts, and that's kind of where I got into like building things. I think, well, first the first thing I learned how to do was weld. I started welding at a pretty young age, and the things that I had to make, you know, they had to like support the weight of houses and things like that. So I got pretty confident with my skills. In that regard, yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, because usually when like I've talked with woodworkers who are getting into welding, they're just talking about like bases and stuff. And they're like, yeah, this doesn't have to support like a ton of weight. So you don't have to be like super crazy welding, but, you can tell, yeah, you could tell people, yeah, this could hold a house. That's funny. Did you ever just make stuff out of like the scrap metal, or did your dad keep you pretty busy, with the work stuff?
Yeah, my dad always kept me pretty busy. It was cool though. When I got into high school, I started taking like ag class, and we got to make like a barbecue pit and and some picnic tables and things like that. I joined the like I know we would actually have like welding competitions. And one of my high school friends, his dad was a full time welder. So and this was just stick welding. So it's kind of where I got into like, you could be a welder, but this could also look really, really nice if you do it well. And like paying attention to that kind of thing. I think lead, you know, has a lot to do with where I am at today. I remember like specifically when my ag teacher, when he was making a picnic table and he measured out like where the screws were going to go on to hold down, you know, the picnic tabletop. Yeah. And I immediately thought like, yes, that makes complete sense why you would do that. And for some reason, I think that has a lot to do with why I kind of kept going down this little path of like building stuff is cool, and building stuff that looks really nice is I don't know, really, really fun to do and interesting to me.
Yeah. The 'cause you've done a picnic table, right? Or an outdoor table.
I made a pretty cool picnic table one time. And it was purchased by the by Flea,
the drummer.
Yeah, the drummer.
Oh, wow. That's yeah. Awesome. Yeah, because I'm trying to remember where I saw pictures of it, because a lot of people do like really cool detail shots, and I remember seeing like several of the detail shots were on the welds, and so it's like, okay, this guy knows what he's doing, and like the detail that you're paying is pretty ridiculous. But so how did you get in contact with Flea, or how do you find your stuff?
It was through I used to work at this place on South Lamar called the Mockingbird, and okay. They were like a consignment shop. And that's where I started. That's where I started woodworking, and that was about 5 years ago. So they had all kinds of interesting people come in all the time, and I remember when they said, that Flea was going to be buying this. I thought that was pretty cool. I think the one you might be looking at, I remember because I just built another picnic table here recently. That one involved a lot more like metalwork, some detailed metalwork. And that one's here in Austin. That's a local spot.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I just found it. It was like from August, last August.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That was definitely the more recent.
On Instagram. Uh-huh. That looks so, so sweet. So Jesse, you went to business school. Is that right?
I did. I ended up in business school.
Where were you wanting to go, or like, what were you wanting to do at that point?
Well, I didn't know what I was wanting to do, really.
Right, right, yeah.
Yeah, I think where I went to school, a lot of us, you know, we were a lot of, like, first-generation college goers. The whole idea of, like, art school was not on my radar. I didn't really know what that was about. So I knew that I had to go to college. My older brother was, you know, becoming a doctor, and I was like, you know, college has got to be a thing for me, but I didn't know what it was that I wanted to do. I ended up going to school and getting a business degree. As soon as I graduated, it was 2010. It was really hard to get a job. It was like during the recession.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And, my older brother, he had just finished his residency, and he got a job in Fort Collins. And, so he was going to drive up to Colorado and start that job. And, I was like, well, you know what? I'm going to tag along with you, and I'll keep you some company, and I'll just find a job when I get up there. And, so Fort Collins was, you know, it was a college town, and it's also like it's kind of like an Austin. So there was like, it was really hard to find a job over there. So I ended up having more free time, than I've ever had in my life, to just do things. And since I didn't have a wood shop or anything like that, Really, actually, all I had was a bike. So I would just bike around town all day and try to find a job. And then that kind of got old after a while. So I ended up just doing a lot of drawing and painting. And so for like 6 months, I just really got into art and painting and drawing. And I started kind of questioning like what it was that I was wanting to do with this business degree, because I think so much more of me was about, you know, following this creative side of myself.
Right.
So when I got back from Colorado, I started working with my dad again. And then, but that, you know, that idea kept churning in the back of my mind. Like, I really, really want to do creative things. And, I eventually got this job at Lowe's, and then I was a department manager at the mill in Millworks, and I always had to line up the trim at the end of the night, and I kept like walking by the hardwood section,
right?
And it kept what do people do with this stuff, and what can you make? And I remember I made my girlfriend at the time, like a little box drum, like the ones that you sit on, like a
cajon. Oh, yeah. Like a djembe or whatever?
Yeah.
Or, no, the box drums. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And from there, it kind of just kept going. Like, after that, we got like a little, chair that had some upholstery work on it, and we redid it. And it just kept going and going. And I've always, drawn things. Even through business school, I was always doodling at the top of my page. And so I decided to make a move to Austin, because I was really missing that atmosphere that Colorado had. And I got up here to Austin, and I walked into this consignment shop one day and just asked if they had an apprentice spot available. And they immediately just walked me to the back and show me the wood shop and ask when I could start. So I'd work at Lowe's all day, and then I would come to this consignment shop and work, from 6 to midnight. And the first thing that they had me doing was make picture frames. So that was the first time I ever walked into a wood shop, first time that I saw a joiner and a planer. And I would just spend hours and hours there just, teaching myself what all these tools did. And then the projects got bigger and bigger, and they eventually asked me if I wanted a full-time job. So I immediately said yes, and just started doing that. And it felt like that was where I was supposed to be all along, not so much chasing this corporate America job. You know what I mean? So I was like, yeah, this is it for me. So I kind of made up my mind that that's what I wanted to do.
So, are you still working at the consignment shop, or are you doing commissions full time?
No. Yeah, I'm working for myself. I started my own business about, 3 years ago.
Okay.
And yeah, I was fortunate that the tech shop was still around back then. So, cause I started it in not the most traditional way. You know, I just started it with just kind of a big dream.
Right.
And at the tech shop, I just had to pay a monthly membership fee, and they had all the tools that I've ever used, and plus more. That's where I first ran into a CNC machine and a water jet. So, after spending a couple of years just doing everything by hand and not so much computer aided, craftsmanship, I walk into the tech shop and they got all kinds of stuff, and it's just filled with all types of people, really interesting people working on electronics and robots and, 3D printing stuff. And it just took what I was doing at the time, working at the consignment shop, to a whole nother level. And I knew that, basically I just wanted to learn. So I was just there all day. I would get there before when the first shift was arriving, and I would, walk out the door with the last shift. I was just there all the time. And I got to the point where I started teaching some classes on how to, use the CNC machine and how to use, all types of things. So, and I feel like it was just like a way to like deepen, you know, your tool bag or whatever you want to call it. So yeah, I'm really thankful for that part of my personal growth and career.
So when you decided to go out on your own, did you have people that you were already like building furniture for? Like, did you have like a client list, or was it just kind of like, hey, I'm going to do this and figure it out as I go?
The first few people that that I had were like close relatives and friends, and and there were some really cool projects. So I was able to kind of start, you know, people had already kind of knew that this is what I was doing for a while. And the first few projects that came along were cool enough to like start making a nice portfolio of, and then I guess it just there was no looking back after a while. It was just kind of full blown, this is what I'm doing. And then a few months into it, you know, I met some designers, I met some interior designers, and that kind of changed the game for me. As soon as I was able to deliver on a few things for them, work just started like kind of coming in at a steady pace. Working with an interior designer is like, for me, it was a game changer, really, honestly, because I'm not that great at marketing myself or anything like that, but being able to, you know, being in the pocket of some interior designers here in Austin is really nice. And also, Austin is such a great community and city to do what I do. They're really receptive to like small businesses and makers and you know, custom work. So it'd be hard to imagine that I can do what I'm doing in most other cities.
So going back to when it sounds like you were, I guess you're riding your bike around and drawing a ton for like 6 months. And then this whole period of just learning tons of new skills with tons of new tools, like, were you always combining the artistic side with the, like, the form and the function of just constructing things? Like, were you always approaching it that way? Or, were you able to kind of apply the art to it a little bit later from the design side?
No, I think growing up, you know, I had an older brother. He passed away when I was 11, but he was like always such an inspiration to me, and he was just good at everything. And he was like one of the best, you know, artists that I ever knew, and everything that he did, no matter what it was, it just had like this, it was special in every kind of way. And I think when you combine like, I don't know, I always wanted to be with like him. I still feel like he's like such a big brother to me, even though he's, you know, it's been so long. But it was, I think for me, the way he did things and his eye for things, it kind of transitioned into how I like to build stuff. And then the background that I had, like working with my dad and, you know, doing things like that, I think it was a very unique way to combine the two, like form and function. You know, I was always found myself very inspired by those lines and you know, the, I guess I don't know how to answer this exactly, but I don't know. I like combining the two. I think it makes me who I am. I wouldn't want to do one without the other. And yeah, for sure.
Where do you get inspiration? Like, who are the people or the things that you follow that you just really love their work and just get inspiration from?
I think Instagram is a great platform for that. You know, I like saving and bookmarking things that I really like. I have a couple Pinterest, pages, and then, you know, sometimes when I'll meet up with a designer, they'll mention, you know, something that is influencing the project. And so I'll kind of like dive into that a little bit and get some background on, you know, how that was developed. Plus I really like going to like Half Price Books and just buying a bunch of books at a time and just like, you know, running through them. Whether it be like how to use a router table or just a book on, you know, architects and designers and product design. I like product design a lot. So I find inspiration in a lot of things. I feel like when I'm drawing something, what I like to do is dive into these inspirations and then try to draw it without looking at anything. Cause I feel like, that is the way that I'll be able to put my spin on it, is to kind of like absorb as much as I can. And then when I do have time to draw it, it's going to be just me. And then I'll kind of like go, into my own thoughts and kind of like think about it. I tend to like stare at things for a while sometimes, like just in the middle of nowhere. That's when some really cool thoughts come to me. One of the coolest things about, you know, furniture making is like the amount of problem solving that has to go into it, because you can't just make something look cool without it, you know, holding up well and working. So
yeah. So when you buy in just like the old like books and stuff, is there one recently that you've gotten that you just love diving into?
The most recent book I read is called Make Your Bed. I got inspired to read that one because I was actually making a bookcase for Admiral McRaven, who wrote it. It was really interesting because I probably built the best, most elaborate bookcase. I blew my own mind. I was like, man, this is really cool. I knew that it had to be great. I knew this was, you know, it was a big project. It had to be sprayed on site, all kinds of stuff. And then the moment that it got filled with books it just topped it, you know, because on the bookcase, you know, were pictures of Mr. McRaven, Admiral McRaven with President Obama. And, you know, it was just like, it was pretty amazing. It's a pretty amazing feeling. So that was the most recent book that I read. I know that it doesn't have anything to do with design, but I think in a way, having that book on a bookcase that I made for the person that wrote it was a really cool way to have like a complete full circle. But design wise, you know, I've been gifted some books like Charles Eames, Hans Jewell. Hans Jewell is one of my favorites. I like you know, diving through the pictures of all these types of things. Some Leslie Williamson is one of the books that I kind of like, but they're mostly like picture magazine books.
So you said, did you say Leslie Williamson? I was trying to write it down.
Yeah, it's Leslie Williamson. She has some cool books.
I was going to just make sure I include all the links in the show notes for everybody listening. So one part that I thought was real cool as I was digging more into your stuff was just your use of like technology, especially on like the 3D modeling, but then specifically CNC. So are you now like generating all your G-code and everything just straight out of Fusion, like from your actual model and then sending it over to the CNC?
You can do that. That's not what I'm doing currently. I'm currently designing all my stuff on Fusion, and then I'll transfer over my vector files over to VCarve.
Cool. Yeah.
And I don't know. I like VCarve. For me, it's pretty intuitive and simple.
It's like way less confusing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's way less confusing for me. And also I feel like I can just, you know, edit tool paths on the fly, depending on what I see is happening on the shop bot when I run it. I also just recently, purchased a shop bot of my own with a business partner, which has been pretty nice. So now I have a CNC machine, you know, like 100 feet away from my shop. which is that's cool. But yeah, it's really nice.
Did I see that you guys are basically renting out time on the machine, like as another business?
Yes. So I work out of a Splinter Group. It's like a collective of craftsmen and women here in Austin, and it's just like a big warehouse with a ton of like woodworkers and metalworkers and ceramicists and painters and machinists and cobbler. We even have a cobbler in here. And but just a bunch of makers. Right now it's humming. So it's really nice. And we just moved here in the beginning of the year, and I thought it would be like a great idea to to get a CNC in the building as well. Because I know that it helps out my business, and I think it could help out, you know, the rest of these guys. And plus it's also open to the public. So it's at routespaceatx.com. That's where you can go online and book some time. And we also got Austin School of Furniture and Design in the building. So we're teaching classes through Austin School of Furniture and Design on how to use the CNC. And then we're renting it out. It's been like my side hustle for there's been a lot going on these past couple months, but I think it's definitely really nice to have it for my own business. But at the same time, I think it's really nice to have here for the community and for like Splinter Group.
Yeah, totally. So, how do you decide when to use the CNC in your projects?
Going through like everything on Fusion, I'll know what parts of it I want to cut on the CNC. If I'm making a console, usually almost every part is cut out on the CNC. But for me, it's not necessarily like the end game. It's just a way. It's an in between. A lot of people go from using like the router, joiner, planer, things like that, or and they'll glue things up, and then it goes off into like using hand tools. So I'll glue up panels or things, and then I'll come and throw them on the ShopBot and have a robot cut them out. And then when I get the pieces cut out from here, then I end up doing like the fine tuning and finish work with hand tools. So so it's not I'm not 100% like only CNC only computer kind of thing. I think the sweet spot is being able to use both or to go like completely across the spectrum. Because it's really nice to have this machine cut out your parts and trust that everything is going to be really square and everything is going to work. But it's also really nice to like fine tune it with a block plane or sand it by hand or whatever it is that you want to do. So, and then whenever you're making something like multiple times, whenever you're making two of anything, that's always nice too, because you can, you can kind of do like a little mini production run of repetitive parts.
So do you, cause I imagine, especially for like the organic shapes, like with that wave, cause you had to replicate it on the other side too. Like is a lot of the organic stuff, is that also like, you'll take kind of the first passes with the CNC and then clean it up?
Yeah. I like importing like I'll draw like a three-dimensional thing on Fusion and then import that into VCarve and create some toolpaths around that. And then usually after that, I'll finish it up by, by hand sanding it, and smoothing it all out. One of my favorite things to do though is also just like some really organic sculptural work. And that has nothing to do with the CNC. So, I don't know. I think it's kind of, plus, I love welding, which I don't know. I like all the things. I'm always trying to learn something.
Yeah, I totally get that. And I definitely want to get more into welding. But every time I hear someone talk about it, it just seems like you can make stuff so quick, like big stuff and strong stuff, which just seems really neat. Like you can have an idea and have it done pretty quick. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. Especially like plywood. I mean, there's bits that can cut through the whole sheet of plywood in one go. and you can move them at a relatively like fast speed and have everything come out, you know, super clean. I don't have a vacuum table on this ShopBot, but like there is CNC machines with vacuum tables, and yeah, what they can do is extraordinary. So if you have the design down, and it really doesn't even take that long to design something simple, you can have something come together. And what it really feels like is if you design something well and you have all the parts cut out, it just feels like you kind of, you know, you're opening up a brand new box or something, and it's just kind of like an assembly of it feels like you're a little kid sometimes just putting things together. Yeah,
but like you had to design the Legos. I feel like that's the piece that a lot of people are like, oh, if you're using the CNC, that's not like real woodworking. And I'm like, man, you don't know what goes into design first off, but then like actually getting the thing put together. And it's so cool what you can make with them.
It is.
So the speakers that are in the tables, are you custom building those as well? Like all the electronics and all the components?
No, I did. I just built a housing around a speaker. I didn't want to get into all that kind of stuff where I was worried about like the pressure for the bass and subwoofer. I just wanted to basically build a housing around something that was already really well made. And what was the cool thing is the clip speakers, they look really, really nice with the walnut, the gold cones and the walnut. I think they go really, really well together. And I posted something on Instagram, and I just did like a hashtag Klipsch, and they put it on their Instagram page. And that was really, really fun, because, you know, it was like a mini publicity stunt kind of thing. That was pretty cool.
So are you just making that front face then, I guess, that's going onto the speaker or surrounding the speaker?
Yeah, I'm making the front face, and then I guess on the inside it's just like a box. So I built it so that there was like a padding all the way around on all four sides that really, you know, secured the speaker in there. And then in the back it had just some speaker mesh. That way, you know, the airflow would come out the back and not be interrupted.
Gotcha. That's really cool. Well, sweet. Well, I don't want to take a ton of your time. I know it sounds like the shop is humming behind you, and you got lots of stuff going on. But is there just anything you're working on right now that you're just real excited about? Like any upcoming projects that people can be watching out for?
Right now, I'm working on a few little side pedestal tables. I think they'll look pretty fun, and I'm also making some walnut stools, some bar stools, and then here in the next coming months, I'm also adding on to that bookcase that I was talking about earlier, and we're making like a curved portion for it to go along one of the curved walls that is alongside the bookcase.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I'm not the greatest at posting on Instagram and keeping people updated, but it is something that I'm, you know, really, really wanting to work on.
Yeah. And just Michael Maximo on Instagram?
Yes. Michael Maximo.
Well, sweet, man. Well, I appreciate your time and chatting with me. Man, what you're making is so cool. So.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, totally. All right. Thanks for hanging around to the end of the show. This is where I give you a fast update about the things I've got going on in my shop. It's been pretty slow. Like I said, I was out on vacation all last week. So getting back into the shop this week, and the big thing we're trying to knock out is a farmhouse sink for a play kitchen. So it doesn't have to hold water, doesn't need a drain, none of that stuff. And the way I am doing it is I have bought some PVA foam. They're basically just like yoga mats. And I have this epoxy paint. I got to look up the actual name of it, but it's from Smooth-On. And so it's for a lot of like prop building. But what's nice about it is you basically apply it to foam. It hardens it up, but then it gives a really smooth surface that you can paint on top of. So we're going to have a really light farmhouse sink that I can custom shape because it's foam and foam's really easy to work with, and then paint it white, have a high gloss finish. So that shouldn't take too long. I'm going to hopefully have that done by this weekend at the time of this recording, and then hopefully painting the rest of this kitchen and getting it knocked out. There's a little bit of details I got to get done, some small doodads like knobs and all that kind of stuff, but the main build of it is completely done. So that should be coming out here soon. All the pictures on Instagram, and then the build video probably in a couple weeks. But I hope you guys are all doing great. I'd love to know, as always, the projects that you're working on. Hit me up over on the Make or Break shop, and we could feature you in a future episode. So until next time, go make or break something in a shop. See you guys.